G'day Trail Runners, welcome to episode 14 of the Trail Runners Experience. On today's episode, I'll be talking with UTMB finisher and Heisen 105 and Eurobilla champion, Andrew Hoff. Andrew joins me via Skype from Iceland, and he gives me a rundown of his amazing experience at the UTMB this year. So sit back and enjoy the show. Okay, so here we are. I'm sitting down with Andrew Hoff. It's pronounced Hoff, I think. I'll have to ask
you. Yeah, that's the one, mate.
The man himself, Andrew Hoff, joining me over the internet all the way from the land of ice known as Iceland. Welcome, Andrew.
Hey, thanks, Dan. It's great to talk to you, mate.
Yeah. So you're in Iceland right now and you're enjoying the trip?
Yeah, absolutely. It's obviously just finishing UTMB. It's nice just having some downtime with my family and yeah, Iceland's just an incredible place to explore, so having a really good time.
Yeah, that's amazing. What a great way to relax after a huge race, hey. And you're before we jump into your UTMB story, you've just for people who don't know, you're a Adelaide-based runner. Do you want to just give us a little bit of background about where your running has come from in the last few years, perhaps, or further?
Yeah, sure. I suppose I've run for a little while. Like, I did some road running and done a couple of marathons when I lived back in London back in 2007, 2008. Just done a bit of road running for a while. And then I'd always heard about Eurobilla back home, and then when we came back from our last trip overseas 4 years ago, I thought, right, I'm finally going to give this Eurobilla a try, and I want to try and see how these ultra marathons go. So, yeah, 4 years ago I did my first Eurobilla, and just that hurt like anything, but I just fell in love with the people and the trails and the distance and the challenge, and from there just... I kept saying to Lara, my wife, just, one more race, honey, let's keep stepping it up and having a look. And the more you talk to people, the more you find out these awesome races, and you just want to, keep trying them and checking them out and raising the distance and the bar a little bit on yourself. And sort of 4 years on, I can confess I'm addicted. I love the ultra trail running and the trail scene and the people and everything that's brought. So, yeah, the last 4 years has been pretty incredible. And to suddenly sort of, find myself doing the dream race UTMB 4 years down the track from starting was pretty cool.
It's pretty quick. It's a pretty quick progression in the sport that you've had, like going from, road marathons, just starting your first ultra and then running what is essentially the ultimate ultra trail race in the world with UTMB. And steep and quick learning curve. And so you've obviously been a quick study in some ways. Have you always so you said you're a bit of a runner. Did you do any other sports prior to running? Like, did you have like a sporting background?
I grew up playing tennis and, so I grew up playing a lot of tennis until I was about 15 and did a little bit of running at school. But after that, no, my life took a different turn and I just did weights and gym for a while and then took up a very social side of life. So I dropped away doing a lot of exercise and, there was a lot of partying and drinking and things like that. But slowly that all changed.
That's good. No, I think that's a pretty normal thing that a lot of people go through in their life. I was also a bit of, I did my sports when I was younger, and then I discovered partying and having fun, and then so all the sports stuff sort of falls to the background. But then it's not too bad older that it gets a bit more, I guess you either make good choices or bad choices as you get older, and so obviously you've made some good choices, but. The weight stuff, I did actually, I think I saw a picture of you as a weight back in the day when you used to do some weights, and you were quite a chunky man in terms of you had some good
I think when I look back I've always I was always a skinny kid, so it was like I hated being skinny. And so I suppose that was this early sign that I kind of get addicted to things where I put everything into it. So I went from being a 70-kilo kid to almost 100 kilos, and I just, you know, just doing weights, and so I've kind of got obsessed with that. And then, you know, then it just slowly shifted to running, I suppose, when I realized that, you know, being big and muscly was one thing, but, you know, I wasn't flexible, I wasn't fit, I wasn't healthy, I didn't have that balance of life. And so, you know, running came naturally then.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just from like a physiological point of view, do you think that like having the that background of weightlifting and being strong, and even though you were big and you've obviously had to slim down, do you think that strength has really carried through into your running in some way?
Not so much maybe the physical, like the muscle attributes, maybe some of that has, but it was more the training and what they did mentally. Like, you know, to get the muscle growth that I needed, I knew you needed to push hard. You had to go into the pain zone. You had to push those last one or two reps out. So it's kind of like training for running. You know, if you really want to make that growth, you've really got to push yourself beyond your comfort, and that's where you can make the greatest gains, you know, in a safe way, as well as long as your technique and all that sort of stuff is good. So I think that was probably some big takeaways from doing the weight stuff early on.
Yeah, oh, that's excellent. Yeah, so definitely a focused individual. So coming forward into your running, and you're preparing for ultras and stuff, and I've followed you. I mean, I've known you. I think I may have met you around the time you did your first Yarrabilla, and I think I had a few chats with you along the way, and we sort of got, and like many relationships, you know, we just sort of built up from one race to the next. Hey, yeah. you know, you sort of see someone after, and you get to know them that way, and that that's the beautiful thing about the running, trail running sport. I think is everyone's just easier to make friends that way. But you're training. You've jumped into some pretty serious training over the last couple of years, and that's with, you've been training under Brendan Davies from Up Coaching. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah. Well, basically, when I first started getting into, I did my first Yarrabilla, and then, you know, when I came back home, there's two people I knew who were really good at ultras, and one was Deej. And, you know, so I said, right, when I get back, I've got to get in touch with Deej and learn a lot from Deej. And I spent a lot of time with Deej, and I crewed for him at Heisen 105 that year after I did Yarrabilla. And Deej was getting coached by Brendan. And Deej had an incredible run. And he was so strong. And, you know, he raved about the benefits of coaching with Brendan. And I thought, right, if I'm going to do this, I want to get the right guidance so I don't overtrain and I do things smartly. You know, because I've done things in the past, even with weight training, where you're not doing the right training. You can do that for months on end and you're not really getting all the benefits from the time you put in. So that, long story short, I spoke to Brendan and he had space, and you know, I started working with him from there. So that was, you know, we've been together, sounds like a relationship, for over 3 years now, 3.5 years, and it's, you know, we know each other really well, and it's been going great.
Yeah, I think it's funny you say it's a bit like a relationship. I mean, it absolutely is like a relationship, a coach and a runner.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I mean, as a coach myself, one of the things that I didn't expect when I went into coaching was you're dealing with a lot of the emotional side of the athlete as well. And,
absolutely.
The highs and lows of training, you know, it's not all peaches and cream for the athlete, because, so sometimes you probably have those low points. And has Brendan's helped you through a lot of that time, I imagine? Not that you seem like the kind of person that has a lot of lows. You're optimistic and everything, but how has Brendan helped you in that regard?
I think it's good, like you said, during the training and stuff, Brendan generally knows if he sets me something, I'm going to smash it out. And it's more come race time, you know, and it's building up those mental strategies and stuff as well, come race time, and how to deal with those challenging moments.
Yeah.
But, you know, he knows me now. He knows how he can push me. He knows when I probably need to back off from the training because I might be pushing too hard and, you know, starting to build up some residual fatigue and things like that. But, you know, it's just he seems to be able to know when to slowly build me up for races, when I need to back off a little bit. But generally going into races as well, it's knowing my strengths and probably knowing when I'm going to need that extra little nudge, you know, when I'm getting into those low points.
Yeah, no, I spoke to Brendan, and he's a pretty insightful man. Like, he definitely knows how to articulate what he wants, I think, very clearly, you know, like, and so I think you did well there. And Yeah, I've got a lot of respect for him, not just as an athlete, but as a coach. And I mean, he just busted out
Yeah.
a pretty decent time at the World 100K Championships. You know, just over 7 hours. You know, phenomenal running. But yeah,
He
so.
still he inspired you know what I mean? He still inspires me as a runner because he's still just at the top of his game and he spreads himself across whether it's a 5K park run or 100K road or 170K, mountain race. He
Yeah.
just does them all, and he does, so competitive at all levels. And that's probably one thing he's tried to rub off on me is not to try and diversify yourself a little bit. Like Brendan's still really big on doing speed training and tempo and stuff like that, even though we might be doing mountain races. And that's really helped me as well on the ultra running, I think. And so a lot of his philosophies have obviously come through on how he trains me, and I think it's definitely paid dividends and stuff,
Yeah. Well, I noticed, I mean, I was going to say this before, but I got sidetracked. You're in your training, I follow you on Strava, and like all good coaches, I pick people's Strava apart in a positive way, because I like, it's there in the public domain, and I like to learn. I, as a coach, I learn from other athletes and other coaches, and it's not, and one of the things that I really have always been interested in that you do, I mean, training for a race like UTMB, you've obviously had to do quite a lot of elevation. And but you also do a lot of flat running, and a lot of people, when I tell them about running flat, they think it's a waste of time. And can you give us some insight into your flat running and how it prepared you for UTMB? I know, because you live in like the flattest part of Adelaide, don't you? You live down by the water there somewhere.
I
Yeah.
and that's been a little bit part of it because I live now near the beach, and we're a one car family, and so I'm 35, 40 minutes from the hills. So I generally only get to do the hills probably on a Thursday when I do hill repeats, and then my long Sunday run. So we've kind of just had to work around that. And I think Brendan still would have me doing a lot of the fast flat stuff I do anyway, but it's all about running economy and efficiency and stuff too. So if I'm doing tempo and speed work and if I'm doing speed sessions where I'm banging out some 400s at 3 minute pace and or doing 3K reps at 3:30 pace, and then I come to an ultra when I'm just cruising at 6 minute pace. Now that's a really really easy effort for me.
Yeah.
So you're building your running economy and efficiency. So when I come to do sort of hold those really easy paces in a long ultra, it is quite easy for me to maintain that.
Yeah.
And so I've and he's just slowly built that up over time. And next thing I've got the speed in my legs. And it was just very subtly, each week or every second week, just slowly, just nudging up that pace that he wanted me to hold for some of those speed or tempo sessions.
Yeah.
And next thing you kind of got that pace up. And then you can run that average pace in a longer race. And it feels a lot more comfortable, My
Yeah.
cruise speed is a lot better.
Yeah, that's a really excellent description of it, man. Like yeah, that's perfect. People, I think, yeah, running economy is so important in these longer race for these longer races, as you say, you want to be able to sit back and just cruise, because you've got so,
Absolutely.
I mean, the biggest challenge. Oh, okay, what would you say is the biggest challenge in this race, something like UTMB? Is it the distance, or is it the elevation, or is it the time? I mean, obviously it's the time you're on your feet. Is there any one thing, or is it just the combination?
It's a combination, like for some people, they're out there for a long time. You're talking some people are 35 to 46 hours, and that's a long time out on feet. You've got 2 nights potentially, so that's sleep deprivation and stuff once you're going into that second night more so. It is, the distance, 171 k's is a long way, 10,000 meters of climbing, that is a lot of climbing. I think for me, the climbing, if you've conditioned yourself well enough, and there's a lot of, if you've conditioned yourself well enough and paced yourself well enough and running efficiently, then probably the climbing is less of an issue, with the climbing and descending. But it comes back to how well you've prepared yourself, I think.
Yeah.
If you've prepared yourself well, and I felt like I had prepared myself well, so I felt relaxed going into it. But the thing is, with the distance, anything can happen. So no matter how strong and fit you think, a lot can happen over 171 k's in that time on feet. A number of different problems can arise, whether it's nutrition issues, whether it's other little niggles, or just general fatigue. And so you've just got to be able to manage through those things.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So I was just going to say, with that, I'm just right now, I'm actually looking at a map of of your race, UTMB, and it's off the race website. And so I was hoping you could sort of take us through a little bit of the race. You know, so it starts in Chamonix in France, and then you work your way around, and you cross the border into where you cross into another country.
We crossed into Italy first.
Italy, yeah. And then you cross back
And
into Switzerland.
then we crossed into Switzerland, and then obviously then towards the end we crossed back into France to finish back in Chamonix as well. So yeah, it sounds pretty crazy running through three countries, but you know it's around the Mont Blanc Massif, so that massif actually obviously just crosses through the three countries, which are all really close together. You know, and it's pretty fascinating. You know, it's an incredible trail.
Tell us about the race atmosphere at the start, like, and how it all went down.
The race atmosphere was just, you know, you see, for a lot of people who've seen the video clips and stuff, the race atmosphere just looks crazy, and it was. This year, originally we weren't supposed to have rain, but then suddenly the weather changed and it was raining at the start. You know, and normally we got there about an hour and a half before the start, and we're expecting there to be so many people. We've heard the rumors that, you know, a lot of people turn up hours before, they want to get a good start, and so you're left there for ages. We ended up, no one must have turned up that early because of the weather. So we were actually really close to the elites and right near the start, which is great.
Oh, good.
And really stoked for that because we thought we were just going to be basically walking the first 10 minutes as we sort of, you know, got through all the crowds. But despite the weather, you know, the atmosphere that they create there, all the supporters, all the locals and everyone, and you know, the playing the music and talking the elites through as they come up to the start line, and you know, then they have this dude on the electric guitar just right above us, just jamming out, you know, the Smash song just before the start. So and then it starts, and you're just going through the streets of Chamonix, and there's just people everywhere just cheering and hollering and kids high-fiving, and you've virtually got that for, like, you know, the first sort of K or two, and then it thins out. But you know, there's people quite a lot of the parts for the first sort of 20K in different areas that are just, you know, cheering you on and high-fiving you, and it's just an incredible atmosphere. I really try to get into it as much as I could because, you know, you just don't experience that in a lot of your races.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, that sounds. I mean, the images that I saw online, it was fairly covered fairly well. Yeah, the images were amazing, and just they you could hear the music as well, and it sounded quite epic. You know,
Oh yeah, it definitely was. It was crazy.
So you've got if you, I really wouldn't mind going through a little bit of a breakdown of the race. I don't know if you if you mind doing that with us. So just because it
No,
was
easy as.
one of the things that I really enjoyed is on the run tracker, we could track your progress in real time and at each aid station, and that was very exciting. And you know, and then at certain aid stations, there was the video, the live feed of you, so we could see you running through. And yeah, it was really cool. And especially early on, because it starts late in the evening too, doesn't it? It starts at 6 o'clock at night. Is that right? It's a
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
that must be a bit of an unusual thing, like to so you have no choice but to run through the night. So
It is a bit of an unusual one, and you know, and I'm normally an early morning runner. I'm used to races starting first thing in the morning, so but it was fine. You know, you just kind of got used to it, and you know, you've actually got a couple of hours of sunlight, and then you're into darkness, and then the first night of running. So and in a way, if you know, if you have a good run, then you're really only going to have one night of darkness, you know, depending.
I
For most
suppose
people, they're going to get, you know, two nights.
it'd be good to run through the dark while you're still fresh, I suppose. But
Well, actually, and that's the way I kind of looked at it too. Like, I'm fresh. I didn't mind you running through the dark. I think, yeah, that was a good way of sort of thinking about it as well. And then, you know, you get up, the sun's coming up, and you might have done, you know, 60 to 80K, depending on how you've been going, or 90. And then, you know, then you've got sunlight to sort of, and the day ahead to sort of, as things just start getting harder, at least you've got a bit more light. Because you generally move slower in the dark as well, right? Because the sort of the visibility in there.
Was it slippery out on the course? Like when you, because there was rain.
It was a little bit in certain sections. Like, obviously, we had bit of rain for the first, oh gosh, I can't even remember now, it's all a bit of a blur, but it was raining probably for the first 30, maybe 40K, and then even the descent down to Shafia. Please do excuse my pronunciations of some of the names of the places. I know they're probably horribly wrong.
Mine are, I'm going to say yeah, mine are so, worse. Yeah.
But yeah, there were some slippery sections. Like, it was nowhere near as bad as I had it last year. I think conditions last year were really bad because I had lots of rain throughout the race. But there certainly were some sections that were slippery, especially through that first night. Yeah. But when the day, you know, it actually cleared up that night, and the stars were out, and it was actually turned into a beautiful night. And I think we really didn't have a lot more rain after that, which was really good. And yeah, so we're pretty fortunate. It wasn't as bad as it could be, but there were definitely some sections that were slippery, which you know, you just had to be a bit more careful and slower on.
Yeah, I mean, you've trained a lot with. I mean, I said you trained on the flat, but you also did a lot of elevation training. And do you feel like you had enough elevation under your belt?
Absolutely. Like I going into this, I felt really strong with the climbing. I was more concerned about the descending, just the impact of 10,000 meters on your quads if you weren't running efficiently, you know.
Yeah.
But I had no concerns about the climbing. I think I'd done enough, you know. For all of the climbing, you're pretty much power hiking. But like everything, you've got to sort of, for me, it's about moving with purpose. So you can just cruise, but, you know, you're not making good time. So it's just hiking with good purpose and hiking strongly up those really steep climbs. And I felt those were probably okay. I had some issues later in the race where they weren't okay, but
yeah.
You know, we can get to that later.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just looking at the your elevation profile. So your first sort of reasonable climb was, you're looking at, started at about 10 kilometres into the race. And so,
yeah.
But it was by no means the biggest climb. And again, I mean, pronunciation is definitely not one of my strong points, but what was sort of the more difficult climbs of the race? Like, obviously later on, you're getting up over 2,500 meters, aren't you? So,
yeah. And I suppose it's, you know, some of the early ones, most of the climbs, you know, had some pretty steep parts to them, but they weren't as bad as I thought some of them were going to be. But, you know, you've got the one, the second major climb, that's the longest sort of climb. Colby or Bohemia or something like that. It's quite gradual at the start, quite steep, but that wasn't too bad because that's only a second major climb. It's probably ones a little bit later, like after Courmayeur at 80Ks, you've got the climb out of there to Batoni. That's short and steep, but then you've got another big climb after that, up to Col Ferret, and that's one of the highest points. And I think, you're coming up to maybe 100Ks in the race. Yeah, and for most people, it's sunrise and it's a new day and it's 100Ks in, and that can pinch a little bit.
Yeah.
But I really think the ones that really naturally impact people are the two or three last big climbs of the race. You know, you're 130Ks in, you know, you're tired, you've been on your feet for a while, and those last three climbs can still be pretty steep. And if your legs aren't in good shape, then it's going to be pretty tough going.
And that's coming into, was it like Champex, is it, or Champex?
Champalac at 123. You know, for me, I was always kind of thinking that was where the race began. I wanted to make sure I got to Champalac in a pretty decent state, because I think that's where most people start falling apart, and those last three climbs kill them, and they lose a lot of time and a lot of positions. So, I wanted to make sure I got there feeling pretty good.
That is interesting you say that, because watching your progress through the race is, you basically were just picking away. I think you were a bit of a hunter during the race, because early on I saw that you were about 100 and sitting in about 100 and something place, and which is still amazing. But you just, through the attrition rate and just probably your steadiness,
yeah.
You're just plugging away. And, you know, I think later in the race you definitely pulled away at a few more people, you know. So, and you got you in 60th or something, wasn't it? 60th place?
Yeah, 60th in the end, eh?
Yeah. So that I think that strategy worked for you then, by the sounds of it. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I was sort of hoping to cruise to Champalac and then really dig it in and really start increasing my positions from there. So, but that didn't happen. I had some issues, so I actually started going backwards a little bit, and then on the last final climb I started getting overtaken because I was having some trouble. So it didn't quite go to plan how I wanted. I really wanted to start really picking off and pushing hard on from Champalac, and unfortunately I had some breathing issues that I couldn't really put my finger on, and I just started losing some steam on the climbs, and it really cost me some time and in the end some placings as well.
Was the breathing issue, did you think it had something to do with the elevation or perhaps just pure fatigue?
I don't know, I talked about it with Brendan afterwards and I was trying to put my finger on it. I felt like I was an asthmatic, and I've never been an asthmatic. I don't know what that feels like, but I just couldn't catch my breath, and this was even on some flats. I was just heaving, you know, and it was an easy effort, so I should have been conversation talking, but and then, you know, I had the two last really big climbs and I was just puffing and I just could not catch my breath. And it was really frustrating because the legs still felt strong, and I just couldn't work out what was going wrong and why I was feeling that way. So I couldn't power up those climbs like I wanted to. That's when I wanted to be picking off people and really charging, and I was getting picked off on the last climb and having just to watch people go past me.
Well, obviously not too many people went past you, but I mean, I can imagine your plan, I think, generally worked well.
Yeah.
You know, like, generally. But,
It did. You know, the intention was there. And I think, you know, Lara and Brendan probably tell me a bit more easy on myself. But, you know, at 170K race, the chances of having, and Brendan's told me this many times, the perfect race and everything going to plan is so slim. You know, there's always often challenges that come up, and it's how we adapt to those challenges. And this was just something that I hadn't experienced before, and it kind of threw me off a bit. And but still just tried to manage it as best I could and try and stay positive, which I'm not sure how well I did, but I think I did okay at times. Other times, you know, the mind is such a big factor out there. If you lose control of that, then you lose control of your race.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you had just some respiratory fatigue, which is something that they've been doing a lot more research into. And, just your lungs get tired, you know, because just from being worked for so long. And so people don't really think about that so often in races anymore. I mean, at all. So it's because it's a new thing. You know, everyone thinks, oh, my legs are tired, I'm generally fatigued. But your lungs and your chest is doing a lot of work, you know? So it's something, I don't know. I have done a little bit of reading about that, and I'm definitely something to do more reading about. But, so, I mean, it's good that you're able to at least keep it together enough to finish still in a pretty damn good spot. So I was just going to ask you about... with the live feed, I wasn't on the live feed. There's a great video of you on YouTube, Facebook. I think Lara, your wife, was filming as you came into one of the aid stations, and it was a beautiful little video. And you saw your wife and your daughter for the first time in probably ages. Tell us about that, because it looked like it was just a good moment, a great moment.
It is, and you know, I get pretty emotional, and I love my wife and my baby girl, and you know, my emotions, well, I think a lot of us runners do, probably gets heightened when you're doing, you know, you're pushing yourself in these extreme events, and just seeing them when I hadn't seen them all night, and I was probably, that was coming to Champalac, and I'd start having these breathing issues, and I was like, oh, honey, you know, this is not where I wanted to be, but she was my rock, and she just said, you know, Andrew, I love you. You're doing well. You're doing strong. And you keep doing this. You know what to do out there. And it's just, it means so much to see them, because you sacrifice and they sacrifice so much in your pursuit of your dreams and your goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's why it's important for me to give everything out there. You know, even when things get tough, I didn't sacrifice all that time with them and train hard to give up as soon as it starts getting a little bit difficult. You know, that's the nature of our sport.
Exactly.
And, but you still need reminding. No matter how many times you go on with strategies to deal with those moments, the mind is powerful, and you need reminding. No, you can do this, and just having a loved one support you through that is really important.
Yeah, I think in a couple of years, your daughter is going to grow up and look at all your achievements and videos like that one of you coming into that aid station. She's going to look at that and realize how much you love her, you know, and how much you loved her then.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so, like, it is. I'm an emotional runner. When I am in a race, I wear it on my sleeve, you know, wear my heart on my sleeve. And I think, you know, it's one of the beautiful things about the sport, especially when things get hard. And I mean, and it's something like that can really lift your spirits, you know. I've seen my kids in races and stuff, and it's and it does, it just absolutely lifts you. And in no other, not, you can get all the high fives from volunteers, and that's awesome. And but I mean, when it's your own flesh and blood out there cheering for you, it's pretty special.
So, oh, it is, mate. It really is. I feel just, I feel pretty much just thinking about it. But yeah, it is. Yeah. It means a lot.
Yeah. You probably, and then, so you're coming, you got through that difficult phase, that part. And then when you were, when did you know, the race was sort of like you were going to get it? I mean, obviously you knew you were going to get it done, but there's always that doubt. But at what point did you know, okay, this race is almost done, you know? And how did that feel, like, to know that it was almost done and dusted? And
it's funny, you know, I suppose one thing I've done, I started to do over the last couple of years is really not celebrate until I'm across that line.
Yeah.
You know, Eurobella last year, it wasn't until I crossed that line. And UTMB, it was like, you know, because we still had quite a technical descent and it had gone dark and you know, you're fatigued and you're just trying to think, right, focus, you know, I've lost some places, can I make some up on this descent? And don't fall over on these roots and these rocks, you know, and bust yourself, you know, 3 kilometers before the finish or whatever. So you're still really focused, and it's like, right, just keep moving. And then suddenly you just pop out into the streets, and then someone's like, you're only a K away, or you know, it's coming close, and you can hear the crowds, and then you start thinking, wow, this is close, this is real. But it's almost surreal as well. You know, is this really happening? And then it's not till you're around the corner. And, you know, for me, I was lucky. It was probably about 9:30 at night when I was coming in. So there was heaps of people still around the city cheering people on.
Cool.
And then just the roars start coming up and you're like, wow. And, you know, I was feeling like shit. I was pretty exhausted. And
yeah.
It just lifts you up and you just think, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm going to see my girls. I'm just about to finish this. And just the crowd. And, you know, you might have seen the video of me coming to the finish.
Yeah.
It just lifts you. And you think, wow, you know, this 171K journey and you know, put it how you want. It's kind of a lifetime in the making, you know, all the different things have helped prepare you for this moment and this race, and you know, you put so much into it, and now, you know, you're finally crossing that line, and it's a wonderful feeling, and to have people around you that you've loved and supported you through it is great too.
Yeah, oh, that's great. I love that feeling, especially when in a bigger race. Like I've never done something as big as UTMB. The closest I can equate it to was my first marathon back when I did the Sydney Marathon a number of years ago. And the way the race is set up, you come through the Circular Quay in Sydney, and you come through and it's quite crowded. And you're running through a fairly narrow passage, and it's just people on either side of you. And it was a similar kind of situation. The last sort of 2 kilometres or maybe kilometre, just surround people everywhere, and you just, I remember I went from feeling like crap to feeling like a rock star, and I was just running down the passage high-fiving everybody. You know,
And it's like you said, it's a great feeling. It just lifts you up, and you know, not that you need to feel like a rock star, but for that moment you just feel like, wow, you know, I feel really special and I feel like I've done something great. And just that energy, you know, energy is it's uplifting, and that positive energy from everyone is just a great way to finish, you know, a challenging race, whatever it is.
It's the culmination of all those 4 a.m. starts to training runs and like remembering all that. And I know you've had plenty of those kinds of starts, you know, like.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, did that in isolation, if there wasn't an end goal in mind, you would have to be seen as a crazy person to be getting up at 4 o'clock every morning to run through the mountains, or run through the hills.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no. Yeah. It's well, you got there and you did it, and now you've got UTMB under your belt, and lots of people didn't finish this year, and some of the best in the world, most of the elite men, so many DNFs this year is insane. So you've got like Killian.
It's crazy.
Yeah. That I was actually really disappointed to see so many DNFs in the men's, you know. Like they I guess they there's they were racing hard, some of them. And I know, I mean, Killian's the only one I think that had a legitimate excuse because he got stung by a bee.
Yeah. And I know Tim Thompson, obviously, he had a fall, I believe, and cut up his leg. And I think they told him he had to stop at one point or he needed to get flown out to get that properly seen to and stuff.
Oh, wow.
I saw Jim Walmsley at Shumpalak. I was running with this guy and we got to the aid station, tapping on the shoulder. He goes, "Have you ever beaten Jim Walmsley in a race?" And he points behind me and Jim Walmsley's sitting there and I'm like, "No way." And so I knew, but you know, I wasn't surprised. I know how Jim races and he obviously goes hard and I just thought, shit, he's just pushed and he's blowing up again or something. But
yeah,
a lot of DNFs and both in the men's and the women's, and it was a real surprise when I finished the race to find out the carnage and stuff, you know. But it's a tough distance, it's a tough race, and especially at the elite level, those guys are pushing themselves pretty hard.
I tell you, everyone here in Adelaide was just absolutely over the moon for your achievement. Like there's probably seriously, every you go out for a run and like you were like literally the talk of the town, and I know I think everyone was behind you, and were just so. I mean, obviously you could see it on Facebook, but here in the real in Adelaide on your home trails, you know, people were just like, "Oh, how good did Andrew go? Oh my God, it's so good!" And you know, so that was. So you should be very proud of your accomplishment, mate, and know that you've got the city of Adelaide behind you.
I think, you know, that just reminds me of just, I felt welcomed, you know. I'm a Kiwi import into Adelaide and everyone's made me feel welcome on the trail scene, the ultra scene right from the start. And I fell in love with the community and, you know, it means a lot to me. All the people that I've met over the last 4 or 5 years have meant so much to me and I feel privileged to be part of that, you know, and that everyone, you know, shares the trails with me and has been so supportive. I think we're all hopefully really supportive of each other on our journeys, our running journeys. And
yeah,
I've certainly felt that at the end. You know, I thought about everyone when I was out there running too, and especially in those tough moments. And some of my good trail friends are saying, "What would they say to me?" And I knew everyone was supporting me, and it really did mean a lot. So it was good.
Yeah. No, good on you, man. So the next question is, so you're on a big trip with your family. Oh, you're traveling the world for the next 12 months, right? And
yeah, that's right.
So can you just fill us in? So do you have a plan of attack, or are you just going to go wherever the wind blows you for the next 12 months?
Well, we've kind of got a plan. We can only be in Europe for so many months on the tourist visa. So we've got a camper van that we've bought, and we're going to cruise around Europe for 2 or 3 months, pop into UK for Christmas and New Year, and then we're going to fly to Asia probably mid-January. I think that's basically when our time is probably going to run out. It's been probably 6 or 7 months in Asia. Like, we've already spent sort of well over a year backpacking in Asia, so we wanted to go back with Daisy and just go to some of our favourite countries like Thailand and Nepal and maybe explore some new places too, like the Philippines and Sumatra and places like that. So, but it's all very much Asia's going to be by the seat of our pants. We'll just see how we're feeling, and you know, having a 2-year-old with us, we'll take things a lot slower than we normally used to. And you know, I'm going to put a call out to trail running friends. I might try and see if I can rustle up a bit of a trail running expedition in the Himalayas, maybe in April, May next year. So if anyone's keen, I'll put the shout out. But no racing plans for the next 11, 12 months. It's really just focused on family and enjoying running in the mountains and the trails as we're traveling, and then see what happens when we get back to Adelaide. There's always going to be things ticking around in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Well, make sure you stay fit enough. Don't enjoy all that, too many exotic foods. And no, just kidding. I'm sure you'll stay plenty fit.
I've put on probably 3 or 4 kilos just in the last week and a half since UTMB. I've just been shoveling everything and anything I can down my neck.
Yeah, good.
No, I will. I'll make sure I stay in shape. I love running and I love exercise and being healthy. So that'll go hand in hand with traveling as well.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Really amazing story. Really, really proud of your accomplishment. And I'd like to be able to tell people. I know this guy that did UTMB and he's a legend. And it's really good. I mean, and plus all your other amazing running accomplishments over the last few years have just been so impressive. You know, Heisen, You've won Heisen, you've won Yarrabilla, and not just the wins, it's just the way you conduct yourself on the trails, mate. So you're a credit to the community, and I won't keep you for too much longer. I really hope you have a nice time over there as a family, and be safe and enjoy all of that the world has to offer, and show that daughter of yours what the world has to offer, you know. So it's pretty awesome, man. But before we go, I want to finish off with, yeah. I do a little thing called the Fast Five, which I ask five questions, and you've got to give me your answer sort of in simple, short answers as much as you can. And I do the same five questions. Yeah. So I'll just go for it. So question one, I think there's, some of these questions might be a bit easy, but I'll say them anyway. Question one, do you prefer roads or trails?
Trails.
Trails, too easy. Yep. Question two, favorite running film or documentary?
Oh, favorite running film or documentary? Gosh, I haven't actually seen that many. I'm just trying to think. Running films. I can think of books, but I haven't seen a lot of running films.
Well, what's your favourite book then? Favourite running book then?
I'm probably, you know, Born to Run was one that really opened my eyes up with a lot of things and stuff too, as I know I did for a lot of people. So Born to Run was definitely up there for me, just thinking about the roots of running and minimalist running and just the beauty of running and stuff as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's a great book. Question three. This one might be hard because you might have already achieved it. Your bucket list race.
Whoa, so the bucket list race was obviously UTMB. The bucket list race is UTMB.
Yep.
It's been done, but there's just hundreds of races across the planet, so I'm sure there's other ones that there's definitely other ones I want
to
do.
You need to get a new bucket.
I know, man, I know.
Yeah, that's great. Question four, your favourite post-race treat?
Favourite post-race treat? Look, I've been even, like pizza, homemade pizza. After my long Sunday training runs, smashing out 50Ks with the vert, I just love to go home and have a big homemade pizza, and that's definitely my post-race. Not that I can eat much after a miler because I'm too stuffed, but normally, if I can get it in, pizza and ice cream will probably be up there, and chocolate.
Nice. Yeah, excellent answer. And your final question is, I want you to finish this sentence. Running gives me
joy.
Joy. Beautiful. Absolutely. That's really good, Andrew. I will. We'll on that beautiful note, we'll end this conversation here, and I'll say farewell to you on the podcast, and we'll see you next time.
All right, Daniel, thank you very much. And thanks to everyone, in Adelaide community for all their love and support, and just all the best to everyone out there for whatever they're training for. And obviously we've got Yarrabilla coming up really soon, and then Heisen, and those races are both close to my heart. So I wish everyone a really good run, and I look forward to hearing about your stories, and please stay in touch while we're away. I may be a bit slack on social media for a little while. I'm having some downtime, but please, people, stay in touch. Hey, you mean a lot to me.
Awesome. All right. Okay, goodbye, Andrew Hoff. That brings us to the end of episode 14 of the Trail Runners Experience. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Andrew Hoff as much as I did. If you did enjoy this episode, think about sharing it with your friends on social media. I'd really appreciate it, and it would help to get the podcast out to a bigger audience. So anyway, until next time, I'm Coach Daniel Ferrugia. See you later.